And right now it's time to talk to Peter about our Legal Eagle topic today is trusts. And Peter, very good morning on this Monday morning.
Yes, good morning to you, Wayne, and to our listeners. Overcast again, unfortunately, but it's fine. Our topic today is a trust. Mm-hmm. What is a trust? And as you've placed onto our Wild Coast Radio WhatsApp, not WhatsApp, but rather Facebook page, mm-hmm. you describe it there perfectly. You picked up. A trust is a legal arrangement. The word arrangement is very important, whereby control over the property is transferred to a person or organization that the trustee sets up mm-hmm. for the benefit of someone else, the beneficiary. So it's something that's established by a trustee, and it's there for the beneficiaries that are named in the trust. Sadly, a lot of people have gone and developed trusts. I use the word developed, in other words, set up trusts, not knowing what the true facts and position is with regard to a trust. I so often get people that come in here and say, okay, I want to form a trust and I want to put my home into the trust. Mm. And then I ask the question, why?
Right.
Oh, no, because I heard that, you know, nobody can touch it. It's separate to my estate. It's separate to me. And, you know, that's it. One day the beneficiaries will benefit. And then, of course, the first question I ask back is that your last home that you're buying? Mm. You do understand that when you sell it one day, you cannot take the money from that and utilize it to purchase another home for yourself, unless it's in the name of the trust again. Mm. You cannot utilize the funds that you derive from the sale of your home in 10, 15 years' time for maybe illness. If somebody develops cancer or something of the like and you need to raise money, you can't do that. Mm. Once you give it to the trust, it belongs to the trust. The trust is not a separate judicial party, but it's a trust that's set up, but it's got to be properly registered, and it must, of course, fit into your overall estate plan. Mm. So you need to be very, very careful. I'm not a firm believer in people establishing trusts when they haven't looked at the broader picture, when they haven't gone to an accountant or an attorney or a financial planner that can explain to them what a trust is all about. The most important thing to remember as the founder or donor is that you are relinquishing direct control over the assets transferred into the trust. It's not a front, a little front for you to get protection and planning opportunities, you know, as you may think. It's a lot more than that. Your ownership will be lost. The minute you establish and transfer, ownership is lost. You are no longer the party that controls that. You can't come along and say, oh, well, I'm going to change the beneficiaries. Oh, well, I'm going to change the house out of the trust and things like that. Not easy at all. So my advice to people that are thinking of setting up a trust is, one, consider the following. Does the trust fit into your overall estate plan? In other words, are you sure that you want to give that control of the asset away? It's going to then belong to the trust. It should not be primarily used to mitigate paying taxes. A lot of people think that, oh, if I pass it on over there, I avoid tax at the end of the day. You know, all the different taxes that come with it. No, it does not do that. It will pay taxes and things like that if you sell on and do that type of thing. So you're not mitigating taxes. You're not doing away with taxes. You need to ensure that the benefit of the trust justifies the costs and administration involved in keeping the trust compliant. Mm. It's not like the old days where there were no taxes, not like the old days where you didn't have to have a banking account, not like the old days where you didn't have to account for anything. All of that now is caught up with trust and proper books of account, a proper banking account, proper movement of monies, etc. is all necessary in a trust. And then also you've got to appoint an independent trustee to ensure that it's properly administered. So you have the expense of appointing an attorney or an accountant or somebody that deals with trusts as an independent trustee, which could cost money. So, you know, it's very, very interesting. It's controlled by the Trust Property Control Act, Act number 57 of 1988. That there forms the basis, the framework of which it is. And all actions taken by trustees must be in accordance with that particular act. It's referred to as the TPCA, in other words, Trust Property Control Act. So it's not any longer like it used to be where you just establish it and that's the end of it. It's there, like I mentioned, it creates a legal entity, yes, to hold assets for the benefit of certain persons or entity. It is not a juristic person. But there are times when in terms of certain statutes it's regarded as having separate legal identity. For example, tax purposes in terms of the Income Tax Act, it can be taxed. It's not non-taxable. So you've got that to consider. It does not have legal standing, so it can't be sued or sue. It's got to be assisted by the trustees. The trustees act on behalf of it. So if somebody has an action against the trust, they will come along and mention all the different trustees. So it won't be to sue the Wild Coast Trust. It will be to sue Peter, Neil, Roy, John, all the different trustees in their personal capacities are cited. So you will be involved in that if there are any actions to be brought or to be defended. Yes, I suppose you can say that assets can be transferred into a trust by sale. That means via a loan granted to the trust, a donation, or a death in terms of a will. A testamentary trust is also different. A testamentary trust is set up, it's a trust as well, but it's set up in terms of a will. Goes through your will, through the master, and the testamentary trust is set up, and the will normally states who will be the trustees and things like that. Whereas the other trust has to be registered. One must remember that you can't just say tomorrow, okay, I'm going to have the Peter Trust, and I'm going to put my home into it. No. There are a full trust document needs to be drawn up by somebody who knows what they're doing for you, and that needs to be registered. The Master of the High Court registers the trust, and it will get a trust number. So it's not something that you just establish and say, oh, okay, I've put my goods, my house into a trust. It's not as simple as that. It's a document that's got to be attended to. You've got to mention who the donor is. You've got to mention who the trustees are, an independent trustee, like we said. Got to mention who the beneficiaries are. And it's not as easy as just adding beneficiaries, adding trustees and that type of thing. That's all got to be done formally and by way of an application. Documents must be amended at the master's office before it becomes official as well. If you have a death of a trustee or something like that, you can replace it, but it must be done correctly. Assets, in the old days, people used to put their home into a trust and transfer from trust to trust. SARS will catch up with you, or not will catch up with you. You've still got to get, if you're selling property, the conveyancer has to get clearance from SARS. So, you know, SARS will regard the transaction as a donation in certain cases if there's a agreement to that effect, but you cannot buy and sell property and that without the necessary transfer duty clearances and the like. The trust as well, if you take a loan agreement out on the trust, you know, it must include a repayment date. You can't just take money out of there. So like I said in the beginning, don't think that a trust is somewhere, if you've put R1 million into the trust and you want to draw 200 because you're the donor, it's not as simple as that. You can't take a loan from the trust without having a proper agreement in place. The loan must be in writing, must give an interest rate, must give a repayment amount. You can make it interest-free. That one you can do, but it must include a repayment date, a final date, and a monthly date, and that type of thing. What do you put into a trust? What property goes into a trust? Well, it can be movable, it can be immovable. You know, any interest in anything can be administered or deposed by a trust in terms of the deed. So if we go back, let's go back now and say again, what are the requirements for a valid trust? Okay. The first thing is that the donor must satisfy himself. He's known as the founder. He must have a serious intention to create a trust and transfer control of those assets or funds of his into that trust. As mentioned, the trust must be set up in writing, and it must be a trust instrument that is registered. Trust property must be clearly identified. If you're going to give a house away, or if you're going to give R1 million or whatever. So that, in other words, the trust object must be clearly stated and must be lawful. You must be entitled to move that money. You know, you can't say, oh, I'm in financial trouble now, let me move R1 million quickly into a trust and then they can't touch it.
Yeah,
doesn't work that way. Or if you own a building and it's in the name of your business and you want to move it so that creditors can't get to it, no, you're not going to get that right. You know, the insolvency laws will catch up with you and can lead to the cancellation of the trust and things like that. There must be a binding obligation on the trustees to administer the trust properly. They must be authorized and have capacity. And, of course, with a trust, there must always be at least one beneficiary. So you can't just set up a trust and have the Peter Trust and you don't state who the beneficiary is. So at the end of the day, the beneficiary is going to benefit from it. And the beneficiary must be clearly identifiable. You can't say, to my children born of my marriage or something like that. You must say to my child Jack, and you can add in then any further children born of my marriage, that type of thing you can do because that's specific. So it must be clearly identified as to who the beneficiaries will be. So you've got the donor who must be clearly identified, the trustees who must be clearly named and accept the right to act as a trustee, I mean. And then the beneficiaries, you don't need any authority there, but you've got to make sure that they are properly known. What you must look out for if you've got a trust, if somebody's established a trust, make sure that you have the letter of authority granted by the master. So to make sure that, you know, that is what the trust is about. So you will always have that trust document, letter of authority, it's called. So if you're going to do anything with the trust, that's what you need. If you're dealing with somebody that's wanting to put something into a trust, make sure you obtain the letter granted, stamped by the master. And of course, if you're on the other side, if you're selling a house and a trust is buying it, the attorney will make sure that there is a letter of authority. He will make sure that the trustees are qualified to act. You know, trustees can be disqualified, so you've got to be careful there. Also, the trust itself will stipulate the minimum number of trustees. So make sure that's in place. Often you find trusts that were established with one trustee. You need to see the agreement to make sure that it allows for that. And then, of course, you've always got that situation where the donor doesn't control everything. So you can't say, I'm going to buy a house. The trustee, there must be what they call a joint action rule. Very, very important joint action rule. It's where co-trustees must always act jointly in regard to the trust, you know, administration. In other words, there must be agreement from them. So if you've got four trustees and the donor wants to buy a house and the other three say no, he can't buy the house just because he's the donor. So it's like anything in, you know, majority rules, and there must be that cooperation from the trustees. So, you know, the structure of a trust then is very, very simple. You've got the founder. That's the person who forms the trust in order to transfer ownership of assets or funds into the trust. So there must be something in the trust. You can't just form a trust without any transfer of ownership. So there's got to be money or a motor vehicle or a house or something like that. So there must be an asset capable, or there must be funds capable of being identified as forming the trust when it's founded. The trustees, you know, the trustees are there not for themselves, They're there to administer and control the trust assets for the benefit of the beneficiaries. So that's the trustees. The trust itself is the entity that holds the trust property. Yes, it has a proper registration number. Yes, immovable property or funds can go into that name. You will open a banking account and invest with it and that type of thing. So the assets are very important. There must be something. There must be property to the trust, a donation, sale, or on the death of someone. As I say, you can set up a testamentary trust. Sorry, mm-hmm. not a testamentary. and then, of course, like I mentioned, the beneficiaries. Those are the people who benefit from the assets. Mm. You know, it can be either income or capital beneficiaries and can have a divested right or discretionary right to benefit from the trust. So the structure of a trust is that the founder is up at the top. And then in the next level, you find the trustees, the trust, and the assets. And then the bottom line on the third tier is the beneficiaries, the people that are going to benefit from them. Mm. So, you know, it's always there to make sure that you know what you're setting up. Some people call it a letter of wish, I think, wishing what you want to donate and that type of thing. It's not a case of doing that. You will say, I wanted to set up a trust or something like that. One day when I die, please set up a trust and transfer X. Mm. If it's not there to be transferred, it doesn't happen.
Right.
So, you know, it sorts out a trust once registered through the master, sets up a trust, and the wishes and essentially requirements of a valid trust must be present. Mm. So, you know, a trust is a constitutional document. It's an instrument which defines the framework in which the trust must operate, including its powers and limitations. That document, the trust document, will tell you exactly what's got to be done. And like I say, it is a separation of that asset from the donor to the trust. The trust, everything vests in it. Mm-hmm. So a trust deed, in other words, creates a inter vivos or living trust, or a will sets up a testamentary trust. So those are your two types of trust, therefore, is a trust deed, which is set up by the donor, or in a will, you can create what they call a testamentary trust.
Okay.
So, you know, your document that is drawn up for you, the lengthy document, will have the aims and objectives of the trust. It will have the name of the beneficiaries, whether they are to become income or capital beneficiaries or both. It will tell you their full names and that type of thing. It will list the trustees. The rights and obligations of the trustees will be set out. That means that their powers, remuneration, requirements for meetings, day-to-day dealings with the trust, and that is all set out in there. So it also will come along and define what can happen with the distribution of income and capital assets, rules and restrictions. It will contain that to say how you're going to operate it. Also, you will also find mostly that a trust, the duration period is there. So, you know, some people will say, upon my death, it can be paid out to the beneficiaries, or it must go on for a certain period of time, that type of thing. So the trust document will set out the wish of the donor to do that. Interesting enough, when you look at it, it's not just an ordinary trust. I think in South Africa, we basically have what you call ownership trust, which is where the trust founder donates assets, property, and it's there to be held for a defined period or a determinable beneficiary of the trust. That's the most common one. The trustees are the actual owners of the trust assets that are moved. The right of the beneficiaries in respect of the trust assets are usually determined by the trust deed. In other words, upon my death or in the year 2030, something like that. So it's determined beforehand. That's the normal trust that's set up, registered with the master.
Right.
Then, of course, you get what you call the Bewin Trust, created when the founder makes a bequest to the beneficiaries and vest the administration of assets in trustees. So the beneficiary is the actual owner of the trust. You know, the trustees only have administrative control of the assets, which they manage for the benefit. You often find, you know, that with the young kids, people set up a trust and say that, you know, upon the child reaching maturity, which is age 18 these days, they can be paid out their share and that type of thing. You also get a curatorship trust, where a beneficiary does not have the capacity to manage his own or her affairs. Then the High Court, that curatorship trust is set up and can be sorted out as well. The main differences between the different inter vivos and testamentary trusts is that the inter vivos trust is set up during the lifetime of the founder, whereas a testamentary trust is after death by the executors. For an inter vivos trust, you need to have a trust deed, like we said, drawn properly, whereas with a testamentary trust, it comes out of the will. So assets transferred into the trust in the ordinary trust, it goes during the lifetime of the donor, whereas a testamentary trust is only after the death and in terms of the will. So if there's no will that sets up an inter vivos, I mean, not inter vivos, but a testamentary trust, then there is no testamentary trust. So you can't just decide, you know, upon death, oh, we want our father's assets to be put into a trust now. That's not possible. If it's not stipulated in the will, there's no duty on anybody to ensure that that takes place. Trusts are described according to the different types of trusts that there are. You know, the purpose for which they are performed is important. You get family trusts. You get empowerment employee trusts. We're set up for the empowered staff and giving them the chance of meaningful participation and ownership in a business venture. Your family one, of course, is the normal one, where you're protecting minor children, family relations, keeping property going and that type of thing. You get offshore trusts as well. You know, it's a tax haven, the offshore trust. It's a very interesting one. It has tax advantages and disadvantages. You need to really chat to your accountant if you're going to want to do an offshore trust or participate in it. There is a common thing these days as well where you've got business or trading trusts. You know, they're there to carry on the business with a profit incentive. The trustee should be independent of the beneficiaries in circumstances like that, and it's there for public use or private use. There is limited liability trading, however, and administration is a little bit less complex than with the ordinary old trusts. Charitable trusts, not to forget the old charitable trust. That's the one that's set up for a charity, and you can get an exemption there from income tax and capital gains, provided, of course, that it carries an approved public benefit entity. And it must be registered as a public benefit organization by SARS tax exemption unit. So donations to a charitable trust which fulfills the regulatory requirements will also be exempted from donation tax. So you can do still a charity tax, a trust, I mean. A special trust, you can get a tax exemption on if you set up a special tax setup. You get the special trust type A, the special trust type B, the different trust ways that the tax comes into the picture. So you need, like I mentioned right in the beginning, we're talking about a trust, and just from what I've talked so far, it's not a simple little thing.
No.
So that trust is something that you just set up and that you can, you know, do with what you like. That's not the position.
Right.
So your advantages, I suppose, you know, we're running out of time, but the advantages and disadvantages, just briefly, the advantages of a trust is continuity. It survives the life of the donor, the trustee, and can span into multiple generations. It can protect your individual assets from creditors, yes, or matrimonial and relationship disputes. You know, the utilization of services, the knowledge and abilities of trustees comes into place. You get help from outside trustees and people who have knowledge of it. you know, assets cannot be squandered.
Mm.
As I mentioned, once it's donated, it's donated. You cannot come along and take from it. You cannot take loans from it without proper agreements in place and that type of thing. And then, of course, management of the trust is out of the hands of the donor or the family or something. You know, it's got to be done correctly.
Right, right.
And then it does to a certain extent have an impact on estate duty on death.
Mm,
so you know, they don't come into the picture. The assets of the trust do not form any part of the estate of anybody.
Right, right.
The disadvantage, that's basically some of the advantages that I can think of. The disadvantages is that a trust is costly. It's not like the old days. You don't just establish a cost. You've got to have it audited. You've got to have a banking account going. You know, is a higher rate of income and capital gains taxes on distributions if they're retained in the trust. You know, you don't know what in future the law is going to do, what amendments are going to be made. So, you know, if there are amendments to the Tax Act, it can affect you over there. So, like I said, you've got annual financial statements, you've got an annual income tax return, you've got provisional tax returns, you've got the onerous duties of the trustees, which are carefully monitored and watched. And, you know, SARS may deem an income back to the donor of the asset if there's not an adequate relinquishment of the control of the asset. So be careful, be cautious when setting up a trust. Sure. So
it's not something that you'll just do. It's got to obviously be very, very carefully looked into.
That's it. Mm. Absolutely. Sure. You know, it's got to be there. Trust is not a simple little thing like people think of it. It's there and it's got its rules and regulations. And one can talk for forever on it. Mm. You know, it's one of those, like we did the maintenance thing.
Yeah.
You can have part two. I mean,
so many aspects.
Almost 30 minutes and we're halfway through what I can tell you about it. Yeah.
Well, I think, Peter, let's leave it on that point and maybe we can pick up another sort of follow-up episode on you know, on trusts, because it's obviously a very complex issue and very important to know what you're letting yourself in for if you do want to establish a trust for whatever reason.
Correct. Absolutely correct.
And in the meantime, if somebody wants to reach you, how does one go about getting hold of Alam's attorneys?
Yeah, they can get us on Facebook. They just add an S to our name, Alam's. Like us, and you can see all the chats that we have with yourselves and with other topics, and our full details are there to be able to contact us, can send us a message through Messenger. Other than that, we're situated at 6 Sansom Road in Berea, little side street where Pep Stores is. Telephone 043-7211-018.
Great. Peter, thank you very, very much. Have a good Monday and a good week.
Thank you, Wayne.
Cheerio then. Take care. That's Peter Adam with today's Legal Eagle Chat. Trusts, a very important topic. And right now, it is news time.